Hey, Founders. This is J.R. Wilco with this week's Unnecessary Foolishness. It's episode 21 of the Superfluous Poppycock podcast. Seth Warren and I are here ready to discuss... Oh, man. I feel like all the wind's been taken out of my sails.
You're fine. No, you sound fine.
I know I sound fine, but I don't feel good. We got to talk about this whole LaMarcus Aldridge thing, and it's like, it's all rumorsy. It's all weird. It's all, I mean...
It's been a crappy week. I'll be honest with you. I saw that story break, and I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. Really? And I just, you know, as all of us did, I think I searched all over, you know, and validated the sources and you know, looked. I'm reading it out of various different news outlets and going, well, those are crap. You know, so obviously it's not legit. Oh, wait, but it broke at that one. You know, it's back and forth. It's all kinds of different outlets that are pushing the story. It's either way, it's not good. It's not a happy story.
No, it's not happy. And it would be great if we could say, oh, Jackie McMullen is you can't say that about her. She's pretty legit.
She's no Rick Bucher. Let's just say that. And that's, I think, the biggest thing that concerned me from the beginning. And you
it's
know, I
Woj.
Told you this. Yes, it's not Woj, but it's a step under Woj. Mm. I mean, if Woj says it, we sell our jerseys. I mean, basically, we go on eBay and we eBay the LA, you know, the jerseys. Yeah. But I just don't. She's not at that level, but she's not far off. She's a credible source. I mean, you can make the argument that a couple of other of these, you know, sources are not, but she is solid. And the way that she floated it, I think, is what really got me to.
See, now that's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, when you watch that video, she's not building up to this, oh, and I heard, and let's get the clicks now, or anything like that, right? She's in the middle of talking about the Celtics and, you know, all this other stuff and just kind of went, well, you know. I mean, either she's got acting chops and should move out to Hollywood in the off season, or this is just like one of those things that actually, you know, she heard and she's talking about. It doesn't seem like there's enough of a reason there for her, as when I watch the video, for her to really be like tugging on this string, hey, you know, clickbaity type stuff. I mean, it was just, it was organic. It seemed to just kind of come out of the flow, and she dropped that little thing. And like you said, if she had the reputation of dropping these kind of things and them going nowhere very often, then we wouldn't even be talking about it right now, obviously.
But that's
not the case.
And no,
that's the first thing, right? That's thing one. We'll come back
well,
to
Yeah, that's later. Thing one, but I don't even know if I'd say thing one. I mean, it's thing one in the purpose of our conversation, but in my book, truthfully, thing one was a week ago, Zach Lowe, you know, kind of implying the same story. And Zach Lowe's another guy that he's built my trust.
Yeah.
He doesn't BS, and he doesn't, you know, a lot of these guys, you've heard me lament the modern state of media with the internet and all the social media and the technology we have today, and it's not like the good old days in that stories were easily validated and stories were easily verifiable if you took a second look below the sheets. Nowadays, there's so many news outlets that make their bones by simply throwing as much crap on the wall as they can and seeing what sticks. And guys like Zach Lowe, women like Jackie McMullen, they're credible. They're not journalists that do that. So it concerned me a little bit that there was some story there, you know. And I tend to, my conspiratorial nature tends to immediately go, you know, towards a real possibility in this situation of potentially this came from another front office to shake up the Spurs, you know, to knock down the Spurs a little bit. I mean, everything that we're hearing about this story with LA, it's really Spurs fans. It's nothing that should come as a surprise. It's things that we all knew. He was upset and discontented in Portland because of, you know, Damian Lillard suddenly kind of becoming the alpha male of that team.
Because of reasons. Supposedly, yeah, he never said anything, but supposedly his camp let it be known.
His posse.
That he wasn't real excited about. But, I mean, like, it's all undercurrents, right? It's all subtext. It's reading between the lines.
Right. Well, we have no choice, because being fans of an organization like the Spurs, you're not going to get anything but subtext. You're not. I mean, did you guys really expect San Antonio to come out in a presser this week and go, "Yep, you busted us"? I mean, it's not nothing like that's going to happen. And then on the flip side, of course they're going to come out and say there's no story here. So you really didn't get any information from them. I mean, of course the Express News is, you know, as much as I like Jeff McDonald, I don't know if you know, if we can really trust their inside sources in this situation, because they're Belichicky and they're very, very tight-lipped, and we're not going to hear about this until it's over. So,
well, the weird thing for me was seeing Jabari Young's story update, and he didn't say we were informed. He actually says an NBA source. So he's outside of San Antonio at this point, not saying that there's anybody in the organization or definitely anyone in media relations that's saying this. He's talking about, I mean, this, and here's thing three, right? If Zach Lowe is your thing one, then you've got Jackie McMullen is thing two, and you got this league source here is thing three, and man, it's just.
League source is always suspect to me, especially as the third in the triad, because technically league source could be McMullen. I mean, I didn't put a lot of noise into what Parker had said. I put more noise into Zach Lowe and into McMullen. I will tell you, however, that there was an interesting article, and I want to read this article. It's very short, but I want to read it to you today on FanSided. A guy named Jason Luther wrote this, and you'll recognize several names involved in this. But I think it sums it up, because you and I talked immediately after I heard the news. Mm. I mean, I pushed the kids and the wife away and said, this is the most pressing business. LaMarcus Aldridge is on the trading block. And I, you and I spoke. And what did I tell you? You know, I thought about this for a while, but what it boils down to is, okay, we really – the information in the background – you know, let me give you an example. We didn't hear anything of substance. If the story would have been, well, because of LaMarcus's drug use, the Spurs may be – you know, they may not have interest in him. There wasn't anything we don't know. There was, well, he may be a little upset. It's kind of what he went through in Portland. And there wasn't any teeth to it. Because of that it was information that we really kind of already knew going into it. I mean, we all knew this when we picked up Aldridge. We all knew that
this kind of thing was a possibility.
There was reports out of Portland. We all heard about that. What did we say? Well, we can get LaMarcus Aldridge. Who cares? And that's the right answer. You have to go after LA, kind of like we would have done with Durant. What, we got to trade five guys? You go for him. It's Durant. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same thing with LA. So I don't think we would have done anything differently. But at the same time, what's going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah.
And if he's upset, I do feel confidence in knowing that we're a part of an organization. See how we fans are? We're a part of an I'm not on the payroll, but I'm going to claim that we are a part of an organization that I don't know of any other organization in all of pro sports that I would trust as much if this story is true as I do the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, man.
So,
It's an IPWT issue, right? It's an In Pop We Trust.
And, right, that's exactly what it is.
And that's where we have to be, right? Because, I mean, from looking from the outside in, there's not just a puff of smoke, right? I mean, like, this is one of those things where I can't reject it out of hand. And you talk about the state of journalism today. You talk about the way that people just throw stuff up against the wall and see if it sticks. I mean, Pounding the Rock was getting called out for just being clickbaity and just, you know, oh, must be a slow news week and that kind of stuff, just for posting about this. And it was just way too big to ignore. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's a stupid comment. It is a slow news week. Newsflash, we're NBA fans. The season's not going on. It is a slow news week. And B, it's kind of a big deal when one of your all NBA team members, you know, potentially could be on the trading block 1 year after arriving. So, yeah, that's garbage.
It's a big deal, and especially when it's, like we said, it's not just some throwaway site like we have a couple of times last year when it's like, man, do we even credit this? Do we even give this any credence by actually pointing to it on PTR? But this is a different deal, and it's so weird too, because I mean, the guys just got done filming the HEB commercial.
Right.
I mean, if LaMarcus is really upset, is he still? I mean, because, okay, sure, I'm sure they HEB sponsors the Spurs, and I'm sure that there's an appearance fee or something like that, but come on. I mean, this is not a big endorsement. This is a little tradition that the Spurs
your feelings. I don't see a correlation. It wouldn't be the first time in history that an athlete has starred in a awkward local ad only to potentially not even
be around.
It's going to
be awkward. They could be awesome again like a couple years ago, and last year's were pretty good too.
But it's somewhat painfully awkward, and that therein lies the charm, but it wouldn't be that first time that's happened, and then you turn it on and go, oh, wow, that guy's not even still around anymore. And generally, the sponsor ends up pulling those ads, which would be an awkward situation for HEB. But, you know, anyway, get into this. Let me get you this article, because you will enjoy this. Jason Luther, and I'm quoting, "It's rumored that LaMarcus Aldridge is on the trading block. That's probably not the case. On Tuesday, rumors began to circulate that LaMarcus Aldridge may be on the trading block. This rumor started with ESPN contributor Jackie McMullen and was later picked up by local city newspaper, the San Antonio Express News. It was an unusual rumor for the San Antonio Spurs. The wording from the Express News is particularly interesting, so it's important to focus on what the paper said. Specifically, they stated that the team would be open to trade, quote, should the right package surface. Fans will focus on that last phrase, and a few media outlets certainly have. Here's the problem with obsessing with that sentence, though. All teams are open to a trade should the right package surface. Currently, Kawhi Leonard is the face of the franchise. That said, if the Golden State Warriors found a way to send Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and Draymond Green for just Kawhi, the Spurs front office would listen to that proposal. All teams are, quote, open to trade proposals, but that doesn't say anything about how serious they are about the discussion. That's the likely case with LaMarcus Aldridge. At the same time, don't take the word of Jeff McDonald, a local reporter in San Antonio, as gospel. Both he and J.R. Wilco, another individual who has long covered the Spurs, are denying any substance to the truth of this rumor. They're probably right. At the same time, the San Antonio Spurs are notoriously tight-lipped about this kind of thing. This is not L.A. or New York, where the media gets a close look at rumors, disgruntled comments, and locker room feuds. The press in San Antonio is tightly corralled by the team to the largest extent possible. If the Spurs are serious about this, nobody's going to know until the trade's got specific players on the table and some serious executives are talking. Is this rumor going to get a lot of play in the media? Of course. This is the Spurs, a no-drama team that rarely airs its laundry in public. For now, those fans of the Spurs and LaMarcus Aldridge should not worry much. GMs have to listen to trade proposals as part of their due diligence. They don't work out more often than not and are rarely serious. Aldridge is as likely to be traded as Ginobili or Parker ever were. Did the Spurs listen to trade proposals for those guys? Absolutely. Was the team ever serious about pulling that trigger? No. The only way this rumor ever gets solid footing is if the Spurs end up outside of playoff contention somehow, and that's just hard to imagine. End quote. I think he summed it up well, and I think at the end of the day, you know, we can talk about this, we can pound this into the ground, we can pound it into the rock. I don't see it has legs. I think it's being floated right now. If he's frustrated, if he's upset, it's all speculation. We're never going to know about it until a year from now the memoir comes out, or you know, LA in a Suns jersey decides to talk smack in, you know, to the Phoenix media. It's going to be one of those situations. Nothing can be done. We can't change it. We need to deal with the business in hand, and that is who is going to challenge the Golden State Warriors this year.
Oof. Well, I gotta wrap this up real quick on the Aldridge thing and say, if I'm being honest and I'm just talking from my gut, this is starting to feel, the more I think about it, like the way that the Tony Parker trade rumors right before the 2011 draft felt.
Yep. You know, it's good example.
Didn't?
Yep.
Ooh, he always did want to go to New York, didn't he? Oh, we just knew he was always just about the spotlight, wasn't he? Oh, man. I mean, he's the one that said that the Spurs would be national heroes if they, you know, played in Madison Square Garden, and then just and whatever happened to that? Zilch, right?
Doesn't mean you're exactly right.
Doesn't mean that they weren't talking. Doesn't mean that they weren't open or listening. Just, you know, means that it never happened because, like you say, the right deal didn't come along. And, you know, they drafted Kwai instead and dealt Green, and the rest is, well, it's history and it's developing history. So, yeah, I mean, that's about as good a capper, I think, as we can put on it.
Well, I mean, I think in doing that same due diligence that basement bloggers and podcasters are responsible to do, you know, I think it's worth saying, and I'll be the one to say it. I love L.A. I've got an L.A. jersey, and you know it's difficult to get me to purchase a Spurs jersey. I've got half a dozen, but you have to earn that. And I'm not talking be a Spur. I'm talking, you know, GOAT type of status. And I've got an L.A. jersey. And no, I'm not – save your comments. I'm not saying he's the GOAT or a GOAT of anything. I'm saying he's a solid player, and I like L.A. But – that being said, if he wants to go, I think we're in a great situation.
Yeah. Well, So
now's
if,
the time.
If he wants to go, if we're going to go there, then is his value ever going to be higher than it is right now? I mean, he just showed that he can play on both sides. He brought it on defense, well more than what I ever expected him to be capable of last year. You know, what was a third string All NBA?
He eviscerated the Thunder the first three games. Do you remember that epic performance?
It's huge.
His value has only gone up even from 2 years ago.
And as a 31-year-old, when could it ever be higher?
Right. He's not going to be getting better. So now we're in a great situation. Yeah. We're in a great place. A lot of guys have floated potential trade ideas, which – you know, they're intriguing, and you talk about.
I don't
want to
go there.
I don't think we should. No, I don't think we do. I think that's disrespectful to him, and I don't think that's fair. But worst case scenario, you know, I've always said, and I love Timmy. Timmy will go down as the greatest Spur. However, the Spur, the logo itself, is bigger than Timmy, and the logo itself is any bigger than any one man, any one player, any given team at any given time. You've got to put the Spur first, and we are in a great position right now of putting the Spur first if our hand is forced.
Yeah, the Spur's bigger than Tim. I mean, just barely, but still it's bigger.
Right. Yeah, Tim's wearing the Spur, but it's still a pretty big Spur.
Nice. Well, I'm glad we can... I'm glad we talked about this. I feel better for having talked about it. I don't always feel better after talking to you. It's always fun talking to you, but sometimes,
bring it down.
Man.
No, let me bring it back down and let me lapse into my original self. Let me tell you the other big secret about LA right now and this trade and this story and all of this smoke screen and false flag.
Sure.
It doesn't matter if we have or don't have LA. Nobody's beating Golden State, JR.
Oh, listen to you know what? I don't know because I ran across a video of Draymond Green, you know, his speech after the Warriors won it all, and the way he called out Steve Kerr and the way he talked. I mean, it was just gorgeous. And I'm like, man, if anything is the squeaky wheel that needs grease, if anything is the fly in the ointment, right? If there's a straw to break a camel's back or a monkey wrench to screw up the works, I mean, doesn't
he's going to be carrying it?
Doesn't it have to be Draymond Green?
He's the guy that's going to be carrying that wrench. We've said it for several years.
And first of all, he kind of did it last year. And it's just, I wonder, is this guy capable of handling success?
Right.
And it would just, again, be, I mean, it was already fascinating last year. And as much press as they're going to get this year, I mean, they're going to get Heedle's level press this year. Absolutely. I mean, there's going to be heat index type blog for the Warriors on ESPN all season long. And we're going to get, you know, Stephen Curry's tweet calling out whomever, right? Or saying that he likes Kraft macaroni and cheese but not as much as Chef Boyardee ravioli. I mean, it's
well, and don't and I know what you're saying, but let me clarify. Don't misunderstand JR in this moment, guys. We're not talking. Can Draymond handle being the villain? Because I'll be honest, I think he relishes being the villain. I think he can more than handle being the villain. It's can he handle being the fourth or maybe fifth wheel on that team? And I don't. That's what you're saying, right? I don't believe that.
It's not just that. I mean, he was. I'm like, they just won the championship, and he's up there griping about how Kerr talks to him about the shots that he shoots.
Yeah.
Right? And Green was like, they had just won it all. And Green's right over there saying, every time I make a shot, I look over at Kerr. I mean, it's like, really? That's what you're doing? You're not thinking about getting back on defense? You're not thinking about, okay, let me review what went well in that play so we can do it again or anything? You're spinning around to give your boss a little jab in the ribs.
A little shade, yeah. Well, and then there was the story this week. I don't know if you caught this. We didn't talk about this during the week at all. Mose Bates, former Warrior, and I don't have the quote in front of me, I'm paraphrasing it, but he talked about this week, gave some comments about how not all is golden in Camelot, and there's a lot going on behind the scenes. There's some locker room stuff. There's a lot of dissension in that locker room while he was there, and there was a lot of friction between Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. And he came out and said that, and the story kind of died a little bit. It didn't really gain much traction, but you talk about a huge story. I mean, if there's friction between Thompson and Green, and the saddest part is that Thompson is probably the guy that's really going to get the shaft this year with Durant on that floor, which is, I mean, I love Klay Thompson. He's one of those, and obviously Durant now, but I actually am one of the few that would take Thompson over Steph Curry if it was straight up choice between the two players. I love Klay Thompson. Well, we looked at him. We looked at him extensively and tried to draft him. So I got a soft spot for Klay, and I hope it works out okay for him, but I hope the rest of the team crashes and burns, if that's possible.
Well, it's one of those deals where, I mean, it's incredibly difficult to win in the NBA.
Yes.
But even higher up, right, raising the bar even further, and increasing the degree of difficulty beyond that, it's harder to win once you've won.
Right. It's hard to maintain that. You're exactly right.
And it's one thing to be able to have that chip on your shoulder and to put it all out on the line and just give it everything. It's another thing to be on top and stay on top and win. Can you handle success is a bigger question than can you get to the top of the mountain? And I don't know, a lot of weird things happened last season, and it's possible that they're just good enough that the degree of difficulty would have to be yanked, you know, just higher than it can be to keep them off the podium next year.
I think their biggest competition, they single-handedly eliminated one of their biggest competitors in OKC.
Yeah.
But outside of OKC, their biggest competitor was San Antonio. And, you know, the saddest part of that is they're going to look better, I think, than they are by default simply because Timmy retired. And the power that Timmy had on that court, even at 74 years old, the power that Timmy held on that court and the importance to that team and the cohesiveness, the defensive rotations, the absolute brilliant basketball IQ that man possessed, we won't truly see that until, I'm afraid, probably after December, after Christmas. It'll really start to take hold, and we'll start to see a lot of things that aren't just rust, but are the absence of GOAT. And that's going to help Golden State. But at the end of the day, you know, basketball is unique in that there's only so many possessions you can have. There's only so many points you can score, for the most part. I mean, you can put five superstars on the court at one time. Only one of them can shoot the ball. And it's different in some ways, I guess, that you could say than football, because football, you could stack a field with receivers and there's only so many guys you can cover. You can destroy a team. But in basketball, you're going five on five. I mean, you got one guy that's shooting the basket at any given time. And it takes me back to something we've discussed. One of my favorite all-time Charles Barkley quotes is in the context of a conversation about playoffs. You know, you hear people talking all the time. A team is down, you know, 3-2. How are they going to come back? I mean, it's unlikely that a team's going to come back 3-2. And Barkley spelled it out that if you're a player, the way that you look at this, if you're a professional basketball player, you don't look at best of seven. You don't look at first of four. You look at, okay, we win one, and then we win one, and then we win one. And then we win one. You itemize each one of those games. And once you do that, and even you apply that to this situation with Golden State, it immortalizes Golden State in a lot of ways because on paper, my gosh, how does any team beat this team out of a seven-game series? Well, I'll tell you how. They play solid face-to-face defense, five positions for one game, and then they do it again for a second game. Then they do it again for a third game, and then they do it again for a fourth game. And you add in risk of injury, you add in personality conflict, you add in the cohesiveness and chemistry of that team. There's so many other factors. They're definitely beatable. There's no doubt about that. No team is perfect and no team is unbeatable. It takes me back to a lot of UT fans will remember, and I forget the year every year. I can't remember if it's 06 or 05, but the Vince Young year. That year was so comical because USC that year, a lot of you don't remember this. Every single night, SportsCenter had a piece in which they profiled a team from the past and compared them to the modern-day USC Trojans with Matt Leinart and Lindale White and Reggie Bush and how dynamic they are. JR, they're the best team of all time. Let's compare them to the 95 Nebraska team. Let's compare them to Miami. It was so disgusting to watch. Even if you're a Trojans fan, I got to think it's disgusting because you're going, guys, let's finish this before you start crowning us as the best college team of all time. And it's the exact same thing with these Warriors. I mean, they hung a banner last month, a 73-win banner. I mean, that's a Mavericks move right there. Congratulations. Have that year finish. And until this year finishes, we can't anoint this team as the ultimate super team. They've got the stats. They've got the numbers. The newspaper has crowned them. But I they're beatable. And if we hold everything together and we, you know, don't trade LaMarcus Aldridge for Goran Dragic, then we might have a chance.
They hung a banner for the 73 wins, huh?
It sure did.
Man, I wonder if the New England Patriots hung a banner for their perfect regular season they had that didn't end in a Super Bowl.
I'm sure they did because they're a classy organization, and the Warriors are still striving to be a classy organization because to remind everybody, and I don't have hatred for the Warriors, at least not yet, but to remind everybody, they're a one championship winning team. That's it. I mean, granted, this is a totally different team. It's a totally different year. It's a totally different set of players. They're not deep anymore.
You're not talking about the franchise. You're talking about this team that they're.
I'm talking about this iteration, this era of Warriors. The Warriors that everybody talks about, Golden State, the Splash Brothers. They got one chip. So it's hard for me to just gasp and ooh and ah. When you look at all of this stuff, yeah, they're going to be fun to watch and they're going to be dynamic. But if Durant is scoring, Curry can't. What's the difference between that and OKC? Well, if Curry's scoring, then Durant can't. Well, what's the difference between that and the Warriors we played last year? I mean, it's going to present different challenges that we're used to, but it just requires a lot more defense. And again, if there's a team that can rise to a defensive challenge.
Oh, it's the Spurs.
So my rant is over. I'm sorry. I got
Man,
off.
No, I enjoyed it because it started off when you started talking about it. It felt to me like you were about to get into how they couldn't be beat. And now, I mean, you've gone so far into talking about why they can. I'm starting to lean and feel the arguments start forming in my mind about how many things can go right for them and how few things have to go right for them to win.
It's the rope-a-dope is what it is, JR. I pulled you in, and then I let you down. And that's honestly, though, and all kidding aside, I don't know that I would want to be Golden State. And it's easy to say, and of course that's it's a fun perspective to say, yeah, I'd hate to have Thompson, Green, Durant, Steph Curry, you know, Steve Kerr as the coach. I mean, that fan base, I'd hate to have all those things. But in reality, the pressure that they're going to be under from game one to game 82, they proved they couldn't handle it last year. The toughness of Kevin Durant is going to push them over the edge. Like, I would not want that pressure. And we're going to see a season, a regular NBA season like we've never seen before. I don't think it was even – it's going to be even near the Miami Heat, the first the friendlies team, when LeBron and buddies got together, and they were so hated. And I think they were hated for slightly different reasons. Yeah. And it's going to be a different situation, but there's going to be, I believe, even more pressure and more collective hatred and disdain for this Golden State team as they go throughout the year. And like we alluded to with Draymond, I just psychologically and emotionally don't believe these guys to be deep and strong enough to stand up to that for 82 games. Plus, forget 82 games, it's 100 games. I mean, the 82 really, they might be able to stand up under the first meaningless 82 games, but it's the following, you know, 10, 12, 14 games that are really, really going to tell the test.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see just how free and easy they are able to play.
Right.
Right. And whether those thoughts of choking and the difficulty in performing under that pressure starts to wear more and more and more, or whether Kerr, you know, pulls a pop and sits Durant, Thompson, and Curry a couple of games later in the season, just go, hey, we're going to take a loss. We'll take a loss. We're not going to chase this win.
Yep.
We're chasing the big one. And see whether or not he reins in his guys, because he absolutely did not last year. Talked about making the decision to not do that last year.
But never did.
Yeah, never did.
Well, and that's actually my biggest fear is Steve Kerr. It's not Steph Curry. I don't lay awake in cold sweats with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant running through my dreams at all. It's Steve Kerr, that little Caucasian guy who delivered for us, who delivered for Chicago. Mm-hmm. He scares me, and I'll tell you why. He trained under the master. I'm not talking the Zen master. I'm talking the grand master. He trained under Pop. Mm-hmm. And in learning and training under Pop how to be an NBA coach, that's a weapon that we don't want to face. It's not Durant. It's not Curry. So if Kerr can find a way to do that, and my fear is that he recognizes, I don't know that he has the depth to do this, but truthfully, it doesn't matter who you plug in as the 3-4 with the teams that he has. If he brought, I don't know that the guys would do this. Again, there's the personality issue. If he brought Durant off the bench for the second team, that would be a death knell. I think that would stretch that team a little bit more to make them a lot harder to hang with. But, you know, they're starting five on paper, going 45 minutes a night.
Mm.
There's just no way. I feel a lot of confidence when I see that. If you tell me that, you know, Popovich's apprentice has now decided that he's going to use one of his mighty weapons as to come off the bench, Ginobili style, that's when things get a little bit more negative and half empty for me.
But short of that, you're willing to sit back and wait and watch for what could go wrong.
Absolutely. And you know, like I said, the pressure, I just imagine the guys without the ball. I imagine Steph Curry without the ball. And I imagine Durant without the ball. And I imagine experiencing that over time and over the course of an entire season. That's not how those players are wired. That's not how they're built. It's
Durant's used to it. I mean, Westbrook held the ball, and there were some times when Durant just couldn't get it, and there were high profile situations at the end of games, and he just couldn't get his hands on the ball. So
we're talking momentary. I'm talking, that's one other player that had the ball. You didn't see Andre Roberson, you know, taking Kevin Durant shots very often. In Golden State, he's going to have 3-4 other players taking the ball at those kind of stretches. And as a player, you know from athletics and all of us out there who have played sports, you can't develop a rhythm. You can't develop a rhythm's the only word. You can't develop a mojo if you get one out of every six shots. And I don't know. I think it's going to be very interesting as to how it plays out. I'm anxious to see how San Antonio develops, because I, And I use that term very, very, very deliberately. I'm very anxious to see how we develop this season. But I'm hoping for the best, and the Clippers are going to clip, as we always say. So the Clippers are going to be a threat.
I like what you said about waiting to see the way that the Spurs develop. There's a lot of questions. I mean,
there is.
Yeah, yeah. So the starting five is set. I mean, there's no question. Parker, Green, Leonard, Aldridge, and Gasol, right? But the questions are about the second team and who we're going to see. What do you expect?
Oh, man. I think it is kind of a toss-up. I think you obviously got Manu. I think you obviously have Patty. Those are the two that I come up with that are without a doubt going to be on the floor for the second team. Granted, we don't have a true, five come on, five come off, five come on. It's not going to be a true five rotation, but in the interest of tradition and the interest of speculation, we're going to come up with a second team. And you've got Patty, you've got Manu. I think you're probably it's interesting. I think you've got to go Kyle, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you probably are going to run. We've all expected Kyle to make the leap. Kyle or Simmons kind of gives you some flexibility there. Of course, Simmons is really kind of more in Manu's role. But you've got Kyle if you played him at a three. I really like your boy Bertans. Mm-hmm. I think Bertans probably at the four. And something I noticed this week, I don't know if it caught you. I saw a video with Davis. And is he or is he not a spitting image? Dead ring of the evil kid, the bully, Scotty, from A Christmas Story. He's a dead ringer for that kid. He looks just like him. And maybe it was the lighting, maybe it was the video I saw, but he is Scotty from that video.
He does. He looks a lot like he looks a lot like him.
Yeah.
Man.
So anyway, take that and make a meme, whatever. That's free. and probably at the five, you got to go Deadman.
Yeah, that's man, this is crazy. Yeah, all the way down to the Anderson / Simmons. When I asked you this question, I just started scribbling down. I've got Anderson, Simmons. I've got Ginobili, Mills, Deadman, Bertans. This is no good. I mean, we can't gripe at each other about this. By the way, it was Farkas.
Scott Farkas
is who you're thinking about that Bertans looks like. But I mean, that's
you've got to integrate Lee in there somewhere, though. I mean, Lee, right. If you wanted to go small, you could go Lee at the five, and depending on how Deadman advances and how
I guess we got a triumvirate here at the bigs with Deadman, Lee, and Bertans,
right?
Right, and then the question is how much are Gasol and Aldridge staggered to be able to leave somebody from the starting unit in there? So
we essentially have
a 10-man rotation while we were finding out, sliding the other guys in garbage time to see what they've got.
So there's a way of looking at this. Obviously, we are extremely versatile, and that's one gift we're going to have this year, more so than the Clippers, more so than Oklahoma City, more so than even Golden State. We are extremely versatile, and again, in classic Spurs fashion of the last era, extremely deep. However, and again, this doesn't really hold water because you're not going to go five in, five out. Of that second team, where's your scoring? Where's your punch?
Well, if Lee's in there, you've got scoring here. He's a rebound and scorer. Not much of a typical defender, but he can score. Yes.
I'm talking, where's your point getter that we're accustomed to? 12 and 15 is not going to cut it.
Well, what are you going to need from the second unit, honestly? Right?
But hopefully nothing, but I want to have the flexibility and the reassurance. Manu can rise up a game here and a game there at his age. Patty as well. But if Patty is really your offensive focal point of that what would you say, pentuplet? Then you're gonna have guys cluing in on Patty pretty quick. Anderson is a decent enough wing scorer. I think Bertans is your wild card there. If Bertans can truly stretch the floor like you believe he can, then that opens up that second team and makes it very, very scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, it's interesting that so much can rest on a Latvian rookie, but Man.
That looks like Scott Farkas.
That looks like Scott Farkas. Man, that's fun. That's fun. Well, this is our last podcast. This is our last preseason, non-regular season, non-here we go, it's the games count now podcast. Do you have any words of wisdom, anything to pass on, any coda?
Goodness. You know, try hard, run hard, rebound hard. Like to give a shout out to the NBA's GM survey from these last week. The annual GM survey of this last week, preseason, a preponderance or majority of GM surveyed in the NBA called out Kawhi for Defensive Player of the Year this next season and Pop for Coach of the Year. So,
man,
obviously GMs, you know, have a pretty good gauge of what they're looking at. I thought, you know, I thought it was interesting.
Who did they say for best teammate? Who was that? Did you happen to catch it?
I did not.
Oh, it was Tim Duncan.
He's not
in the league anymore. And
how powerful is that? He got some votes for best teammate.
No, he got the most votes.
I didn't think he got the most. I thought he got some votes, but not the most. You know, either way, it's spectacular.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just the respect that he gets is just phenomenal.
Well, he's coach of whatever the hell he wants to be. So you got to give that guy some respect. But props to the GM for calling that out. And I found it interesting because in all of this GS love, it's interesting to me that Pop was the coach of the year. Not that Kawhi was the defensive player of the year, because I think that's a solid no-brainer. Depending on the year that DeAndre Jordan has, Green is going to cannibalize himself along with their MVP vote out in Golden State. But the defensive player of the year was pretty solid. The coach of the year was interesting, because I would have thought that Kerr would have won that this year.
Well, just shows you what people think about Pop and think about the Spurs, I guess. But no, you're absolutely right. Duncan got some votes. He didn't win, but he got some votes. But the fact that he's not even in the league anymore and still getting votes is it's pretty impressive.
I'm waiting for him to win the Defender of the Year finally and justly after this season. That would have made me happier had they named Tim Duncan the Defensive Player of the Year after retiring, because it's long overdue. And
Duncan
one of the
for
biggest...
the decoy.
Oh, it was. It's one of the biggest tragedies or injustices about the modern NBA that Duncan was never an award winner at the DPOY.
Yeah, boy, it's tough. I think the voters want a story, and the story is, you know, so many of his great seasons was the MVP and even the Finals MVP, and you know they just wanted another story.
So you're saying the voters want a story, and that's exactly why they've back to back voted stellar Bachelor Kawhi Leonard as the story?
What I'm saying is they want a fresh story in as many areas as possible, and there just wasn't much of a narrative for Duncan in many of those years. And his in so many of his best years, he was already the MVP.
That makes sense, because when I think narrative, when I think storyline in the modern NBA, I think Kawhi Leonard. You're exactly right. I know what you're saying. I do know what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, but please misunderstand me on purpose in order to make your point.
What do you have?
I'm calling superfluous poppycock on that comment right there.
Wait a minute, because you asked me what I had for the NBA going into the season, which I couldn't be more excited. Uh-huh. How great is it to have basketball back?
I know. I'll tell you what I have to put a capper on the preseason is really getting to see Pop unleashed here with all of the mad genius, with all of the, you know, what's the scientist going to cook up in the lab, right? I mean, like, I'm excited to see the team play and find out who, you know, how far do we go with a different crew as the main second team.
Yeah.
Right? Are we talking December? Are we talking all the way, you know, halfway into the season? Are we still juggling things, you know, once the All-Star break happens? I think it's going to be fascinating. Are the Spurs really as good as everybody thinks they're going to be? We've got Vegas. You've got ESPN. You've got really everybody saying they're the third best team in the league. Is that going to bear itself out in the regular season? What's Pau Gasol going to look like? How is he going to fit in? How big is his role going to be? And if it's not a huge role, then what's that going to look like, right? Watching the body language of, for the second year in a row, a brand new Spur, right? Somebody that we've seen play for so long in a different uniform or in different jerseys even, and see the way that he looks in the silver and black. What's David Lee? I mean, is he going to get much space at all? And then you add on to all of that my huge man crush that I have for Davis Bertans, are any of these little guys gonna make the team, or are they all gonna go to Austin? You know,
yeah. You're Bryn Forbes, your boy.
Yeah, Forbes. I mean, Garino, any of those guys, are they going to make it, or are they going to leave the 15th spot open in case that they want to grab somebody and everybody else getting shuffled off to Austin to get seasoning? So, I mean, there's so many storylines. There's so much up in the air. We haven't had a season like this in San Antonio in 14 years?
Technically 17 or 18, but you know,
a whole lot of turnover after David as well, right?
And there was. I just I'm still, you know, obviously it's going to be tough not seeing 21 out there. We haven't had a season like this.
We'll talk about that next Wednesday. How about that?
Yeah. You mentioned that everybody is giving this to the Spurs as the third place team. Yeah. My superfluous poppycock this week is former Spur Steve Smith. Caught him the other night on open court, claiming his third team. Take a guess.
The Houston Rockets or something.
No, close geographically. He's picking the Mavericks as his third team.
Third best team in the league. The Mavericks.
Well, third best team in the West. I'm sorry. He didn't talk about the West. But shame on you, Smitty. Shame on you.
Shame.
For picking Dallas. I'm not sure if you were drunk, maybe, when the segment was filmed. I'm hoping that that's what it was. Possibly you were trying to read the monitor and the glare from your one championship ring. You're welcome. From San Antonio, maybe caught your eye and you saw Texas and you thought maybe it's Dallas. I don't know where he's coming from with that.
You would prefer that he be drunk over that actually be just a difference of opinion or a poor judgment. Well, fantastic.
I would prefer that it would be like a body snatchers type of thing, honestly. that even over drunkenness, that some alien life form had taken over his earthly and physical realm and caused him. That's the only acceptable application other than just pure drunkenness in my mind, to pick Dallas as the third best team in the league. But who knows? Mark Cuban has surprised us before. I'm sorry. I couldn't.
Oh, wow. You were doing so well. That's fantastic. That's a perfect note to end on it right there. So that'll do it for this episode, Pounders. We'll see you next time. Until then, keep safe and let it fly.